Yeah, or flies, all these flies. Oh, that was another thing that I was talking about. You see outside things that remind you of inside things. The flies in the meditation hall, you know, how they see that light and they want to go to that light. That light is their non-negotiable, isn't it? In their mind, that light is heaven. I've got to get to that light, you know. That light is beauty in heaven. And they fly right into that light and they die, don't they? You know? And even you put the screens on and you try and protect them. What do? Like, I've got to get in there. And they die, trying to get their non-negotiable object of attachment. Sad, isn't it? Or they'll sit here and they'll bang themselves against the window. Bang, bang. Even you open all the doors, you know, they're in the, you know, my retreat cabin. They go to the one window that won't open. There's a window right next to it where I could slide and get them out. They won't go there. I open the door, they won't go there either. They only will go to the window where they can't get out and bang themselves against it time and time again, thinking that that's the path to happiness. You know? So we have to ask ourselves, how much am I like that? You know? What is the light or the window that I keep saying I can't live without, that I've got to have, that I keep going towards? And what happens to me when I do that? And here's where we get to what it means to really love ourselves. Okay? Because we're always talking about how important it is to love ourselves. Loving ourselves doesn't mean that we're the fly and we go for the light. Okay? Loving ourselves says, look at me, I'm this fly going for the light and I'm killing myself. You know, I care about myself. I'm valuable. I want myself to be happy. I have the Buddha nature, I have the Buddha potential. I can do something useful with my life. I can experience real love and compassion. I can experience real joy. I care about myself. Therefore, I'm going to stop banging my head against this window and flying into the light and do what I know will actually create the causes for the happiness that I want. So that's what it really means to love ourselves and have compassion for ourselves. You know, when we really make a strong determination, let's create the causes for happiness. You know, and being like the turkeys doesn't create the cause for happiness. And being like the flies doesn't create the cause for happiness. So you can take the example of the cats, you know, sleeping all day. Curl up, find a nice comfy place, and sleep. Now, how much we'd like to do that, just zone out. Sleep for hours and hours and hours, curl up somewhere. Precious human life goes by, you know, sleeping, zoned out somewhere. He knows I'm talking about him. And, you know, so, I mean, we have to sleep to keep our body healthy. But I'm talking about the mind that likes to oversleep and the mind that likes to space out and the mind that just likes to, you know, like that. It's kind of like the cats. And then what do you have at the end of the day? A lot of fur on the sofa. That's all. Yeah. Like these two guys are so close to the Dharma and so far away. Yeah. And so here we are sharing the same environment. And then you really see how precious a human life is in this environment. How you can practice. The kitties, you know, they're here the same day as you are. You know, go through the same weather. they eat the same food every single meal all the time. Don't complain, they're very happy to eat. But they can't purify. And then look at the mice. As if mice are going to bring happiness.
A question on the attachment. It seems like the energy for being attached is really like, can be really motivating. I'm not sure, but if you had a good attachment, the one who enunciated a lot of things, is it okay to daydream about that or whatever it is?
Okay. Yeah, so you're talking about that when there's attachment, there's a lot of energy to go do something. So then you're saying if we have something virtuous that we want to do, yeah, is it okay to kind of daydream about doing it? I think we have to discriminate here what exactly attachment means. Okay, let's take a couple steps back. Attachment is based on exaggeration. So we've exaggerated the good quality of someone or something, or projected a good quality that isn't there. And then the attachment clings. Okay, attachment's like a bubblegum mind. It sticks to what I want. You know, I've got to have this. My mind's stuck to that. And then, of course, we start planning, you know, and contriving and doing everything so we can get what we want. And so we can destroy whatever gets in our way of getting what we want. When we have a virtuous... Some people think that if you decrease your attachment, then you have no motivation to do anything at all. Because like you said, attachment gives you, you have ambition, you have energy, you want to go do something, there's happiness, there's pleasure, yeah, I'll get up off the sofa. So, but if I'm not attached, then we think there's no motivating force to do anything. So we just become a bump on a log and we just sit there all day going, duh, I don't have any attachment, duh. Well, that's not enlightenment. Yeah, that's called apathy. That's called being spaced out if we just sit there, you know, with no energy. So for us, we often get very confused exactly about what attachment means. And wanting something or liking something is not the same as being attached to it. Aspiring for something is not the same as being attached to it. Now, in some cases, wanting and liking and aspiration and desire are based, you know, have attachment with them, but sometimes they don't. So don't think that every time you're wanting something, it's attachment. Okay? When you're hungry and you want to eat, there's no attachment. You're hungry, your body needs food, no attachment. The attachment comes in when I'm so hungry and I really want this and I hope they're having pancakes tomorrow morning for breakfast because we haven't had pancakes for so long, and I hope they're having spaghetti for lunch and I hope they have chocolate and I hope they have this and that, and you know, all that. That's attachment, okay? But, you know, your body's hungry, you need to eat. Don't worry about it, okay? So... Then there's other things, like when there's virtuous projects that we want to do. I mean, like you're doing these transcriptions, okay? So you wake up in the morning, you think, oh, I mean, I don't know about you, I love transcribing. For me, it's a lot of fun. So, oh, I get to do transcribing today. That's not attachment, you know? Now, if you're saying, I'm going to do transcribing today, and if Kathleen gets to the computer before I do, I'm going to kick her out because I want to do it and she can't. Then I'd say there's some attachment to the transcribing. Okay. But if you just have this aspiration of, oh, this is something that's really nice to do and it benefits other sentient beings, and it helps me remember the Dharma and it helps my meditation and I want to do it, great. You know, there's no attachment there. Okay? Yeah? So don't think that every time you aspire for something or every time you're going towards something, that it's attachment. I mean, when you came to the retreat, you know. Now, if you were thinking, I'm going to that retreat, I don't care what those people say because I heard Susan's food is so good and I want to be there for those 3 months. You know, then I'd say, okay, there's some attachment. Yeah. But if you, you know, have this very strong wish to come and do the retreat, it's like, wow, yeah, you know, what an incredible opportunity to look at my own mind and study the Dharma and, you know, think about what the purpose of life is and the meaning of life and get myself put together and do something meaningful with my life. Yes, I want to do this and I'm going to do it. You know, you have very strong determination, a lot of energy to it. That's not attachment. Okay? So, yeah, so...
fine line sometimes, it seems.
Uh-huh.
Because the energy, sometimes you get, makes you want to continue, prostrate harder, or, you know, with that. And it has a good motivation, somewhat, but then like that, you know, that anxiety feeling of the attachment.
What do you mean?
It's just like a short boost rather than like thinking future lifetimes ahead. It's not so like in 2 weeks I'm going to do this and push hard instead of having that.
So just so you're saying like you want to accomplish a certain number of prostrations or something like that? Or
maybe this is going to purify this. Boom. And then, by doing this prostration, I want to purify this, and having that attachment, not the attachment, not attachment, but thinking and believing that yes, it's going to, even though you might not, or it might not happen, having that, you know, confidence where that it will make you, even though it's not, I don't know if it is correct or actual, or it will happen.
Not getting it. How that's negative. Or how are you thinking that that could be
attachment? Like, I watch myself, it feels really similar to how attachment feels. The, I don't know, the energy or the clear, the, it's really clear in my mind. There's no doubts, there's no instructions, I want food. You know, that. You know, when I'm sitting there and have, you know, some good thoughts, or I'm doing my mantra, there's no instructions. But then, I feel like attachment. I just want altruistic after that dharmic motivation.
Well, if there's a real dharmic motivation, there's not going to be attachment. Okay? So I think maybe. Does somebody else have a better grasp? Or does somebody else have comments they want to make about what Miles said?
Well, I think that what you wonder about is the driving energy, that like excitement, yeah, is the similar thing.
I mean, when I play basketball, I was thinking daydream about, you know, playing in front of a crowd or whatever, but not to get attached to the crowd and join it, but so that I can, you know, be motivated. So would that be similar to, you know, the improvisation or whatever, to help my mom?
No, I think that's good. You know? I mean, you're doing prostration. You may not be able to help your mom in the next 10 minutes or in the next year, but in the long term, by purifying your own mind, you know, you're going to be able to benefit her and a ton of other people. So you think about the, thinking about the benefits of something and getting excited about it because you think about the benefits. That is one of the ways Lama Tsongkhapa teaches. Okay? In all the Dharma books, I think, in all the traditions, I mean, in the sutras too, the Buddha always talks about the benefits of something. So that we get kind of like, oh yeah, there are these benefits, I want to do this. But the benefits that you're seeing are different than when you get yourself excited about playing basketball. because the benefits of playing basketball are, you know, reputation and prestige and, you know, feeling, you know, all this kind of stuff, okay? But the benefits here are, you know, oh, my mind's going to be clear, and when I meet people, I'm going to be able to be more compassionate towards them, and I'll be able to share the Dharma with them, and I'll be more skillful in how I can share the Dharma. And so the benefits you're aiming for, they aren't kind of just selfish sense pleasure benefits for yourself. You know, they're things that benefit yourself and benefit other people, and not just in the short term, but in the long term too. Yeah? So, yeah, thinking about the benefits and wanting to attain them. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Okay, but I think what you don't want to do is you don't want to get caught in the expectation that something's going to happen.
Right.
Because that's where the attachment then comes in. And
right. 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 It's like if you generate the motivation, okay, I'm going to do this meditation session for the benefit of sentient beings, and at the end of this meditation session, if you're not enlightened, then you say, oh, you know, I wasted my time,
Yeah, I think actually probably on something mild, we're definitely dealing with much, much more subtle expectations, because I do that all the time. Mm-hmm. So I'm always with that piece. And yeah, and it's very interesting and it's quite disturbing.
Mm. Can you make an example?
No. I mean, I honestly can't, because what happens? Maybe I can remember. I don't think I'm going to be able to pull anything up. I mean, and that's the thing that is the thing that's very, it's very interesting.
Mm. You mean thinking that you'll get some?
It's not that I'm saying I'm going to do this. But what happens is the way something, just occurs, I realize my disappointment ends up coming up because of an expectation I had that I wasn't aware of. So it's very subtle.
Okay.
And is that maybe what you're?
I
don't know anymore. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know if that answered your question.
Just from the word.
Yeah.
Thinking about the benefits, but that thinking could be also labeled as kind of dreaming to a certain extent, or playing out something that will motivate you to do the practice.
Okay. It depends how you're thinking of the benefits. Mm-hmm. If it's like, okay, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to be a bodhisattva, and I'm going to walk into that room with my body glowing with light, and everybody's going to feel instant faith and bow down to me, and then I'll speak to, the Mariner Center, filled with Buddhas, I'm going to convert all of Seattle this way. That, I would say, is maybe not so good. But, if you have, this specific scene of how you're going to, kind of change something or make some splash impact, and you have a very specific scene that you kind of get attached to, that's not so good. But if you're thinking, okay, if I do this practice, I'm going to be clear, I'm not going to be so angry, I'm going to be more generous. I mean, it's not just doing this practice this one time, but over a period of time and really building these good qualities, then they just kind of become a part of me. And then without even trying, then kind of who you are in a situation becomes beneficial to people. You know, and you see that? Great. Yeah. Yeah, it's, I think if it's, I'm going to get home from this retreat and then I'm going to go talk to my mom and my mom's going to become a Buddhist, then no, But if you're just really thinking of the long-term benefits, and, you know, you're excited about them and they seem very good, you know. I mean, the benefits are better than eating cheesecake, then go for it. You know? You know, like, I mean, because you find this all throughout the long run, you know, the advantages, it starts with relying on a spiritual mentor, the eight advantages of relying on a spiritual mentor, and the eight disadvantages of not relying on a spiritual mentor. You know, the advantages of remembering death, the disadvantages of not remembering death, the advantages of bodhicitta, you know, the eight advantages of love, I forget how many advantages of bodhicitta, all the advantages of realizing emptiness, all the advantages of generating renunciation. I mean, they talk about this all throughout the long run, the benefits and advantages, so that our mind goes, oh, yeah, you know, that looks good. Because if we don't see the advantages, then so easily our mind misinterprets things. So this whole thing we've been talking about, you know, the attachments, if we don't see the advantages of giving up the attachments, then it just looks like, you know, our heart is getting ripped out. And it looks like, you know, what Achanamaro said, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this, you can't do that, and life's no fun and how terrible. Well, who wants to live like that? And so our wrong conception mind makes up that story about that's what renunciation is. Okay? But you look at His Holiness Dalai Lama, does he look like a miserable renunciate? Or you think of the Buddha and the Buddha's own life. Was the Buddha a miserable person? Yeah? So then you start thinking, well, what are the benefits of changing my attitude? Yeah, what's the benefit? Maybe I don't have to give up my non-negotiables. Maybe I just have to change my attitude for doing them. Maybe I have to make some of my non-negotiables negotiables so that sometimes I have them and sometimes I don't. Or maybe I have them, but I have them with a different motivation. Or maybe I decide my non-negotiables are kind of a pain in the neck, and I will be much happier without them anyway. You know, in the long term. Okay? So you give yourself some space and some room here instead of, you know, squishing yourself with your own preconceived idea of what practicing Dharma means, which isn't what practicing Dharma means at all. Yeah? Is that? Okay. So what have you guys been thinking about all week?
Can I make a question of this item?
Uh-huh.
I don't know, but for me, always appear with fear, the fact that, okay, I should help, I should do, I should, so I start to get nervous about what it's like. For example, I was thinking, okay, usually Patricio only has one day off, and he works a lot, and in that day off we like to do simple things for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to think with this kind of thoughts, of talk. Oh, maybe we need to go to an orphan and to play with kids and to do da 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 da, and no have time for us because this is self-cherishing attitude.
Yeah.
So, and I start to get nervous.
Uh-huh.
And I start to feel not comfortable.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Right.
And I just want to say, can you please say something?
Okay. So what you're talking about basically is when we're pushing ourselves. Mm-hmm. We have some kind of romantic idea of how we would be if we were only completely compassionate, you know, And if I were completely compassionate, on the day off from Patrizio and I, it's our only day, we have time alone, we're going to go start this orphanage, and then I'm going to take out a loan and build the orphanage, and then I'm going to hire these people and, you know, can make orphanages all over the country, and da da da. And I'm exhausted, I'm burned out. You know, no. That's what I call Mickey Mouse Bodhisattva. Okay. That's what Mickey Mouse Bodhisattva does, a lot of different things. That's one of the Mickey Mouse Bodhisattva things. Because it's not coming from a genuine, kind place in your heart. It's coming from pushing, you know, kind of, oh, here's this image of a bodhisattva and I'm going to squeeze myself into it. Okay? So it's not done with a joyful, compassionate heart. It's done with a pushing, squeezing mind. So the motivation is off. Okay? So, you know, practicing bodhicitta doesn't mean that all of a sudden we're going to be a great bodhisattva and we're going to be Mother Teresa and Dalai Lama rolled into one. Okay? It's like we do what we can do according to our own level. We know that it's very important to keep our own mind comfortable. And we kind of nudge our mind a little bit. It's kind of like when Flora was doing the exercises with me last week, she said, okay, you go like this and you go like this, and you stretch to your limit, and then you go a little bit more, but not too much more. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to your limit and then a little bit more. So it's like that. Okay? If you're going to go open the orphanage, you're going to your limit and a whole lot more, and then it's not going to work. Okay? So it's like that, you know, with developing our good qualities. We try and get ourselves to go to our limit, but just a little bit more. Not too much so it becomes uncomfortable, but a little bit so we stretch a little bit so that we can get used to it. Yeah. I mean, it's all about kind of accepting where we are, isn't it? Yeah. Accepting where we are, not being complacent about it, nudging ourselves, but not pushing.
I think, when you ask what if I've been thinking about for a week, it's actually applying just what you said there to sleeping, food, and the mantra.
Mm-hmm.
And just trying, I mean, in some ways, I find it incredible that I'm 57 and I don't know how much food I really need. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and that's just such a commentary on out in the world, there's no time to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just make the food, eat the food, do the next thing. But here, there's time to kind of go, oh, that was too much. You know, now I feel like, you know, ugh. And oh, that, I'm kind of hungry, you know, so that's okay. I get to feel hungry, you know. But trying to have the time to know this. In a really deep way, like, is 7 hours of sleep enough for me? Am I sleepy because of karmic seeds of sleepiness? Because it comes and goes. It feels really real in the meditation. Like, I need to sleep. And then the meditation's over, and I don't need to sleep at all.
Yep.
So I go, that wasn't about sleep. It was something else. But having the time to notice that, and also the mantra, like, I'll push really hard on mantras, you know, and I'll just and then I start feeling this thing, you know, that I think I talked about it for the very first, like, driving 60, but I'm just nervous, and then kind of go, oh wow, that was like not good. I lost everything, but I lost my peace of mind, I lost the visualization, I didn't know why I was doing it, it was just an assignment. And then, you know, finding again, going back to, okay, you know, that's not why I'm here, and bringing a happy mind back to the cushion, mm-hmm. and then building back up. And it's just so interesting.
Yeah.
But it's with everything. I mean, I'm finding it with everything. And you're not, it's like every single thing, it's like tipping, you know, watching myself too much, too little, too much, too little, and just kind of going. That's what I've been doing. It's very interesting.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Kind of astonishing. No.
Yeah.
To say, I don't know.
Yeah. And how we don't really know ourselves.
Yeah.
How out of touch we are with ourselves.
Yeah.
Because this whole thing you were saying about sleeping. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really true. You know, and it's like, oh, I've got to go to sleep. And the session ends, or the teaching ends, wide awake.
Right.
Yeah? You know, there's nothing to do with sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But learning that about ourselves, yeah? And then you learn to feel the difference between real sleepiness and that kind of karmic sleepiness, mm-hmm. the karmic mm-hmm. heavy. The karmic one has a totally different feel to it than regular sleepiness.
And noticing that it feels like blacking out almost. It's just like, mm-hmm. wow, there's a black towel on me, and I'm like fighting to, you know, do anything to get it off. You know? It's like, open my eyes and breathe and, you know, get all the blankets off and, you know, just kind of,
yeah.
It feels just like
drugged.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like being drugged.
It's like someone just shot you up with something and you're like,
yeah. Because it's like, I don't want to go there, and it's just completely. And then, I mean, I just do Tonglen at that point. I just say, you know, if this is some kind of awful karma, whatever I did, can I take it on from everybody else?
If you can remember before
you're yeah. Well, the best you have to do is just throw a blanket at Kevin and then he'll throw something at you and be like, what?
And Kevin, remembering all the things you're supposed to do, remember death is at your shoulder, get cooler, open your eyes. And I was doing all of them and then my mind said, I don't even care if they kill me. I don't care if I die, I have to go to sleep. I thought, oh my God. It's up to me. I mean, it's like, yeah, that. Can you take a second?
Here, I want to sign in and throw this.
And to really know that I mean, that was, Kathleen, I can hear absolutely. And 90% of the time before I came to this retreat, that sleepiness would win. Mm. And now, it's happening in the second session consistently. After breakfast, I was like, oh, it's breakfast. And I just would sit there and say, you are not going to let this put you out.
Mm.
You know, so I've been doing the mantra. I've been, you know, straightening up my posture. I've been thinking about, what have I been doing? Taking off the blanket, thinking about it as something that I have to eliminate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get into almost putting on a little bit of a warrior because it has been following me since the first time I walked into DSF 7 years ago. I've done purification on it. This is the first time I've been able to wait, walk myself through it and get on the other side and not have it.
Good.
And it can be very, very discouraging because it'll take you out for a whole hour. And you just lost an hour of your practice. It's kind of a self-cherishing, you know, it's a little bit of a selfishness.
What else have you been thinking about?
Well, I've been dealing with a lot of shame this week. Yeah, it's really kind of hard to talk about, actually. Is this thing that I do, and it's happened this week in the retreat, is that I have a huge amount of jealousy towards my Dharma friends who I perceive that have many more virtuous and Dharma qualities than I do. That I almost can't stand them. And I've gone through it this week big time. And then I've traced it back and I've, you know, there's a lot of past life stuff in it, and I got very, very afraid around what might have, you know, when you said 2 weeks ago about purifying the negativities in relationship to the three jewels, when this shame came up in relationship to the retreat here and my friends here, is that I thought about schism and sangha. That could be caused by being part of a community where you were jealous around your fellow monastics who had very, very strong, virtuous, positive qualities that you at that time didn't have, and how you could really, really cause the undoing of a community. I mean, that's what came up as I was dealing with this. This week is saying, this is interesting because this is something that plagues you, not just in the workplace for people who appear to be more competent, things like that, but to be looking at the people that I love the most and not being able to handle their virtue. Just totally blew me out of the water, the fact that I could look at it. You know? Yeah. And if I can't have it, nobody can. And damn them.
Being jealous of others' virtue.
Oh.
How does that link in with shame?
Shame is a mental factor that is considered to be positive, isn't it? One of your mental factor teaching where shame is actually to really acknowledge something that you have seen as negative.
The word shame in English has two different meanings.
Yeah.
So some people translate that mental factor as shame. But because of the double meaning in English, when you were saying shame, I was thinking of the shame that we have that's a negative mental factor, where we feel very bad about ourselves for no reason at all. So that's why that mental factor, instead of translating it as shame, in the positive sense of shame, I translate it as integrity. Okay? Because I completely misunderstood you. I saw a few other people nodding their heads. Yeah, because shame can often, you know, usually in English is a negative thing. So it's a mental factor where you restrain yourself from doing negativity or thinking negative because of respect for yourself and respect for your own Dharma practice. So it's a sense of self-respect, a sense of your own integrity.
Maybe I was using the wrong.
No,
because I was really trying to watch the thinking that was generating these negative feelings, and I was like, I mean, the sense of not ever wanting to have that kind of mind.
Yeah.
You know, not to be able to rejoice at other people's virtue, but, you know, what a horrible thing not to be able to have in your mind.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's that mental factor, integrity.
Okay.
You know? Well, it's integrity, it's conscientiousness, caring about virtue. Yeah. It's regret. Yeah, it's a determination to change. Yeah. Yeah.
It's how poisoning that type of thinking can be in a community.
The jealousy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Jealousy in a community is awful. Really awful. Yeah. That whole thing of jealousy and competition, you know, it's like you've come together for a virtuous purpose, and then what do? Well, let's see who can jostle to have more power or more prestige or be closer to the teacher or, you know, be seen as the most knowledgeable person or whatever. Yeah, it makes everybody pretty miserable.
Well, that was part of my, you know, I was thankful for the silent things to kind of what they come up with.
Yeah.
And do a lot of the whole purification is holy.
Yeah, that's good. Because, you know, the fact that you've been able to look at it and see it and really say, I don't want to go there anymore. Yeah? I mean, that's what will be your protection in the future from doing that. What have other people been thinking about the last week?
It seems like similar vein, at least what Kathleen and Nance have said, is that just being aware of things, kind of time. It's like there's a routine of six sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel really entrenched, but not, I don't mean that in a negative way. It's kind of there. There are markers for the day and there's meals, but it's kind of like the points of reference and the sessions for me maybe less insightful than they were earlier in the retreat, but still very rich. I just feel like I feel very settled in, like I'm moving in between these sessions and doing different things in between, and just no great ahas, but feeling very grounded, reflective, you know, kind of really, I guess in some ways thinking, like kind of maybe some of the ahas from earlier, just kind of going through some of those again in terms of that sense of, I can do this differently, you know, I can, you know, just reinforcing that. Appreciating the routine. You know, and I can't, it's just that little difference that you don't get that time. And it's interesting because I still feel incredibly busy. I mean, it's like, I brought my journal and I've written some, but it's like, I'll go 3 or 4 days and I'll just go, you know, I didn't have a minute that I felt like that I could stop to do that.
Uh-huh.
But it feels perfectly okay.
Uh-huh.
Like I was doing things that, for the most part, that I wanted to be doing as they were. So this is kind of an interesting flow to the day, and yet everything feels different. The sessions are different, but it's grounding to be back there. I mean, I go back on the cushion and I go, did I get up? You know, I mean, it's almost kind of like a little bit of a time warp. It's kind of like...
And the days seem to be going very quickly, don't they? Yeah, very quickly.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but it's for me very quickly. Yeah.
And then it's kind of the timelessness. It's just kind of...
Yeah, it's a nice sense of timelessness,
isn't it? Yeah. It's like it's Wednesday, but okay.
Yeah.
So I think when it's Sunday, it's the weekend. It's like,
What's the big deal? It's Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm going to get up, I'm going to meditate, I'm going
to... Yeah, do the same thing I did on Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
And I guess the one that I always say is just kind of aware of, too, some of the things that just annoy me. You know, maybe time enough to kind of just watching them in all sorts of ways. It's actually been pretty spacious, so I can find myself, you know, smiling about them, you know, for the most part. You know, I mean, it'll change in a moment. It'll go, you know, from feeling irritated to, okay, well, that's interesting. You know, it's like it's probably the person I need to be do something nice for, because I just seem like they're irritating or whatever. You know, it's. So that's been interesting, just to kind of watch that in little ways. And,
And what about the attachment issue?
Attachment as far as just the non-negotiables, or I've played with that. I have it written, but I'm going to do that. I mean, that's kind of to me, it was a good image that I've been playing with it quite a bit. As I thought about it, I don't feel like I have a lot of non-negotiables. I have places where, you know, they pull at me, but I guess I'm in a pretty willing space for I don't know what you said, something about, but I can change the way I look, and then they can be non-negotiables, and although I can change my attitude about them. So it doesn't seem as solid, maybe, as it might have been when I started, you know, kind of at least my mental list. Being specific, it's things about another thing you just said. It's like if I'm in this relationship, is Dharma going to be the center point of that? Is that in fact how? If that's kind of a non-negotiable, you know, is there a way to do that, or say yes, that's happening, or yes, that's, you know, that's, and be willing to. Be willing to express that, be willing to live that, to be willing to change that if it's not, you know. And at least in the space of being here, you know, I kind of think about, well, what will that be like when I go home, you know, or what will that be like, you know, for work? I mean, you know.
So which is the non-negotiable, the Dharma or the relationship?
I was saying relationship as being non-negotiable. That was probably on my list, you know, in terms of, and yet, yeah, I can see that turning around. But it's like it is negotiable, you know, because Dharma. I mean, you know, Dharma comes first in that sense, but it does put the relationship into jeopardy to some, you know, it puts any of those things into jeopardy. Am I willing to jeopardize? Am I willing to jeopardize, you know, whatever the nature of a relationship with my daughter, or, you know, with work, or, you know, in an intimate relationship? You know, to me, it's kind of, what will that be like to be back in those situations where I feel, you know, I have to keep my life, write my list down and check that, because I think that's really a really important barometer for me to be able to do that, to kind of go back and say, okay, how has that changed being in a different, back in a different environment? But it's frightening in the sense of both sides, letting go, and then if I let go, you know, will I snap back to something, you know, to something it because it's so strong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how to how the outlet will play out.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry about that yet. It was interesting for me afterwards, you know, when I went back and I was thinking, what's non-negotiable in my life? You know, there's a few attachment things here and there, you know, the kind of major attachments I, you know, that I have to deal with. But they're all things I'm working on. They're all negotiable to that extent. Mm-hmm. They're stronger. But, you know, it's like they're negotiable because they're on my list of things I have to work on. But when I looked and I asked myself, what's non-negotiable? My ordination is non-negotiable. Yeah, my seeing my teachers every year is non-negotiable. Going to Geshe's Opus on the course every year is non-negotiable. I mean, it was very interesting for me to see kind of what are the priorities in my life, what, you know, I'm willing to negotiate and what I'm not willing to negotiate. And then I began to realize how different my life was from a lot of other people's lives, you know, in terms of what was non-negotiable to me. Seeing my teachers every year is non-negotiable. Yeah. Doing my daily practice every day is non-negotiable. It's just, yeah. So it was quite interesting for me to see, because I realized, oh, I don't have these same things, you know. Yeah.
They are not negotiable, but they are not...
They're not attachments.
Like the discussion with him.
Yeah, right. They're non-negotiable, but they're not attachments. Yeah. And that's what I was asking you, Kevin. What is it that's non-negotiable? Is it the Dharma or the relationship? Because if the relationship is the non-negotiable, the Dharma's going to lose out. Because you always go for the non-negotiable, don't you? You know, the Dharma is the non-negotiable, then the relationship molds or changes or is let go over whatever way to fit the commitment to the Dharma. So it's, if they're both equal, then you have, you know, some difficulty.
Just to address you specifically in that, I think it made a really big shift coming here. So when you were saying the things at the very beginning of sacrificing or making dedication or commitment to that, that really made a big difference in the context of my relationship with Jen, and it made a really big difference for her. So it was very powerful. So I feel. So being specific in answering that.
And I know in terms of your dedication to your job, just getting here, that was a big thing. Just, you know, this comes first.
And I've been really, I made a commitment to myself when I knew that was happening, that I wasn't going to spend time at the retreat trying to figure it out, and I have not done that at all. It's been really, really nice to honor that commitment, just to say, I'll figure it out. I mean, I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, good. That's a major thing.
Yeah, it is.
That's a major thing. Yeah.
In this moment, my practice is very stretched because for me, it's interesting to work with my mind and with my body. I am trying to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting when I sit in my cushion, I decide I don't move in this session. And even if my pain in my neck is very intensive, I don't move it. Try to do it. And sometimes I think that I push myself. But I ask myself, if I continue in this position, I die? No, I don't like. And I can continue, okay? Mm-hmm. And when I logro, when I can do it, it's very interesting to see that I don't put the control at my, I control my mind. I get the control of my mind, and I don't let that. I feel like I need to move. No, you need to put there, and you continue in this position. And it's very interesting that the result after that, because I feel something. I don't know how. Mm-hmm. But I feel that this pain continue there, mm-hmm. but I can continue with my practice, mm-hmm. and it's very interesting mm-hmm. to see that I can control in this moment my mind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this part is very interesting. It's only one session in the week, or uh-huh. not in every session, but. Sometimes I try to propose to it, and mm-hmm. it's very interesting to can do it. And
yeah.
Because I feel that I feel good.
Yeah. Yeah.
In this moment, I see that the time for here is over. I need to return to my home, to my husband, my family and all the people that I live. And I am trying to do a list that I need to change in my life,
mm-hmm.
because I have time for see that I made a lot of mistakes. And now I need to change something.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I express many times that I feel some impotential or maybe fear, mm-hmm. that maybe I can do it.
Mm.
Because in this moment it's easy to see that the Dharma is very important in mm-hmm. my life. But sometimes I think the relation that you say about how do you believe and how do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I believe that it's important, my Dharma. But what I do, and I need to
mm-hmm.
to work in this point, because I don't know what happened in this moment when I return.
Yeah.
And I feel, when I meditate, sometimes I have a lot of distractions about mm-hmm. what I am going to do when I arrive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very tempting for the mind to jump ahead to the future.
Mm-hmm.
To some extent, it's good to think about how am I going to integrate this experience with my life and what things do I want to change.
Mm-hmm.
But don't let your mind go to Mexico while your body is here. Because there's still quite a number of weeks left while your body is here. And if you want to make the changes when you're back there, then while you're here, really strengthen your Dharma understanding. So instead of visualizing what you're going to do when you get back, because then you're disconnected with here, aren't you? You're not here, you're back there. Bring your mind back here and really contemplate the Dharma and keep your mind in the Dharma here so that you deepen the understandings that you've gained.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you deepen them while you're here, then automatically when you go back, it'll be easier to make the changes. But if you just keep thinking about going back while you're here, then you miss the whole chance of being here. And you just get restless, and you haven't strengthened the things that you need to strengthen because the mind has been, you know, living somewhere where you're not. Yeah. So don't go back to Mexico when you're here. Be here. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's very precious to have the opportunity to be here. And you'll get back there, and then you'll go, I want to be back at the Abbey, and you'll dream and dream and dream of being at the Abbey, and realize that while you were at the Abbey, you were never here because your mind was back in Mexico. And so then our whole life goes by, we never are with who we're in front of. We're always living in the past or future, you know? So you spend your whole time, you know, thinking about your loved ones and your non-negotiables and the people you miss. You spend your whole time when you're here thinking about everybody who's not here. Yeah? And then you get back when you're with them, and it's nice for one day, and then afterwards you're going, oh, I miss the Abbey. But what did I do at the Abbey? I spent my whole time thinking about being here. Oh, I wasted the time. And then you feel a lot of regret. So it's better to be here, you know. Because anyway, all the situations you're dreaming of and people you're dreaming of, are the people going to be exactly the same as when you left them? No, they're going to have had 3 months without you. Yeah? Then they'll probably be a lot more independent, you know, different things will have happened in their life. You're not going back to the same person. You don't know what you're going back to. So stay here while you're here. Huh? Live your life with the people who are around you instead of with the people in your imagination who you're attached to. Yeah? Yeah? So just, you know, when the turkeys start running, bring them back. I think that's really true. And especially what you said, you know, normally if you had like a week or a 10-day retreat, oh, such a long time. So if you look now and say, oh, I'm starting a 3-week retreat, look at it, you know, not that you're ending a 3-month retreat, but you are, tomorrow morning, you're starting a 3-week retreat. Okay? So take that viewpoint. You know, I'm starting retreat tomorrow. And I have 3 weeks. Wow! Such a long time to really do my practice. How fortunate. Yeah. I think what Flora said is quite important. So we're just starting retreat tomorrow. Yeah? Yeah, we're just starting, going in there fresh. I don't know what I'm doing. So each day when you go in there, just say, I'm starting retreat today.
Thinking about the mantra, you know, when we started, I could hardly get through one mala, so I hope that doesn't happen. Starting retreat. Om mantra.
Where is something? Yeah. When you're starting a three-retreat tomorrow, it doesn't mean that you're starting the same retreat you just did. You're starting a new retreat. Okay? Yeah. So you don't have to go back to memorizing the mantra. Yeah, but you're starting a new retreat. Okay. Shall we dedicate?